Welcome to May 2023 with Royals, Rebels, and Romantics. This month, we are all about the coronation of King Charles III and, since it's May, Anne Boleyn. We have some of our favorite historians joining us, so sit back and enjoy. Welcome, everyone, to our special episode about the coronation in 2023. I am so excited to be joined by Jessica Storschuk, an historian about town, who is going to talk to us today about some of her expertise, her inner thoughts, her ideas about the upcoming coronation, but also about the history of coronations. This event is so important throughout British and English history. And so we want to experience what we're going to experience on May 6th in terms of all of these other coronations. So welcome, Jessica, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So I want to start by asking you about, I've been reading your articles on Royal Central, and I was just reading one about coronation banquets, which is something I wanted to follow up on because they were such an important event through the Middle Ages and into the early modern period. And then now they're not so much this exciting, challenging event. But anyway, tell us a little bit about Royal Central and how you got started there and what's going on with that. Tell us about that.
Of course. So if people don't know, I write for the Royal News site, royalcentral.co.uk. And as one might expect, it's Royal News from around the world. And the way I got into it, I started as a blogger for them. I think it was 2019. And one of my good friends, Kristen Quintino, wrote for them at the time. And so I connected through that way. And then after I'd been there for a while as a blogger, I moved up to reporting. So I cover royal news items from around the world. And also I handle a lot of the historical articles as well, because that's what I love and what I know. So I try to balance it as best I can. But the coronation banquets article was really interesting to research because it's one of those coronation traditions that's really gone by the wayside. And I think it's unfortunate from a theatrical perspective. So if people don't know, the coronation banquet was, as it sounds, a banquet that the monarch would hold after the coronation. It was historically held in Westminster Hall. So if you've ever visited Parliament in London, it's the old hall. It's the very old one. It's the oldest part of the Palace of Westminster, which is technically what Parliament is known as. And these banquets started, I believe it was in the 12th or the 13th century. My memory is lagging on that, but we started quite early, and these banquets were very elaborate and very costly endeavors because the monarch was essentially trying to show everyone, look at all this amazing food and these incredibly expensive place settings. Look how much wealth and opulence I have. And there was course after course. For some of the medieval monarchs, they went on for days. But there's a tradition that I found very fascinating was the king's champion or the queen's champion, if appropriate. And the champion would ride into Westminster Hall on a horse in full armor and challenge anyone who didn't accept the authority of the new monarch. And so it's a pretty good visual, I think. I just had images of like a knight's tale in my head. But it was the last one that happened was in 1821 for George IV's coronation. And if people don't know, George IV had the most expensive coronation in history. He went big, and he was Prince Regent, and the regency was named after this period. And he essentially wanted to outspend Napoleon in his coronation. So George went very big and he had the coronation banquet as you normally would. But his brother, who took the throne after him, William IV, was really trying to save money and cut down on expenses. And it's part of the reason why people liked him. But William discontinued with the coronation banquet. We do see different notable meals after, like in 1953, the Queen hosted people for a banquet at Buckingham Palace after, but it's not this official coronation banquet, and no one is riding into Buckingham Palace on a horse, unfortunately.
I think that is unfortunate. I think we should bring that back. I would love to see someone ride in the midst of the banquet on a horse. I just loved reading about that, and I think it's too bad that tradition has gone away.
Especially with all their horses.
Yes, yes. The Windsors love horses. So this would be a good time to bring it back. And just the idea of this opulent banquet all set out, and then someone comes thundering in full armor. And of course, part of that in the medieval times, and I want to pick up on that notion, because the idea of having an armored warrior willing to fight for you was very important in medieval times and through the Wars of the Roses and early modern England and all of that. And the coronation was also this amazing time because the monarch was demonstrating that he, most of the time, or she occasionally, had power and had control. So why do we still need a coronation when the monarch has this very different role in the modern world than in medieval times? Why is a coronation still so important?
So I will say, if you ask an anthropologist or a sociologist, they will probably give a very different answer than a historian will, because I'm sure there's a lot in anthropology about the ritual. But I think, and it's a great question to ask, because the British royals are the only royal family left in Europe with a coronation. Everyone else tends to do a proclamation or a declaration. It's usually connected to the government and the that country's parliament, but the Brits are the only royals left to be doing a coronation. And a lot of people, especially in a cost of living crisis, are asking, why do we need a coronation? So I think there's a few factors at play here. Firstly, in terms of logistics, I think that no matter when Charles came to the would come to the throne, there was money set aside for a coronation. I don't think that money was quote unquote earmarked for other things and then pulled away. I think this money has always been kind of set aside for it. And they can roughly guess within a certain time period of when it's going to happen, just with the late Queen's age. But I think with the British royal family, they do play a very different role now. And part of their role, and a lot of people dislike it when I say this, but part of their role, they are celebrities and they are kind of there to entertain people. They're there to be these very visible figures who have very formal lives and they follow all these rules and etiquette that most of us don't. They dress very specifically. You can read countless articles about, should Catherine wear tights or pantyhose or shouldn't she? Can she wear nail polish? She just wore nail polish at Easter. Is that allowed? All these things. So the British royal family is partially there for entertainment now. That's not how they came into being originally. As anyone who studied medieval history will know, that was not the role of the monarch. But now they hold a very different role. And the other thing is that part of having a royal family is having tradition. That's a part of it. Because if you're not going to come back to these traditions, you may as well scrap them and elect new leaders every how often. You don't need this. This is part of why they exist. And it's originally, they were there and the coronation followed. And I think it's kind of the opposite now. They know they have to do these things. And there are some ceremonies and traditions that don't need to happen, i.e. the investiture of the Prince of Wales, that's really only brought in the modern period at specific times. We saw it with the future Edward the Eighth, and then for Charles. And so, but it's not a guarantee. And William didn't have one. We didn't need one. He was announced as Prince of Wales. He is Prince of Wales. So I think the coronation is public theater. That's part of what it is. And I was doing some research. If you look up on the UK Parliament website, they have some great resources on the coronation because the government technically hosts it. And that is one of the points is that it's public theater. It's something that they do. So it is really interesting to look at it and we can chat about the religious aspect or not, but like what the religious aspect means to everyone watching and what role that plays now versus what it played in the past.
That's a really good point. So there are a few things you said that I want to pick up on, and I'm making massive notes so I don't forget anything. But I want to start with the tradition, and then I do want to talk about the religious aspect because that's still part of it, but it's perceived in some ways differently now. But before we go there, I'd like to talk about the traditions, because the royal family has been releasing, and the government, I guess, as well, has been releasing some details about the coronation. And some things will be similar to the Queen's, which was 70 years ago, which is a long time ago. The world was a very different place. Some things will be different. So can you talk about, in terms of the traditions that we expect to see, that the traditions that are an essential part of a coronation? So you mentioned the banquet, which unfortunately has gone by the wayside. That would be great. But what are some things that we will definitely see that are definitely part of that tradition?
So in terms of the ceremony itself, there are six parts to the coronation ceremony. There's the recognition, where the congregation recognizes the monarch. The Archbishop of Canterbury will ask, "Do you recognize this monarch essentially as your monarch?" And everyone says yes. The monarch takes their oath. They are anointed, which there's been news about that. They'll be invested with the crown. There's enthronement and then homage, and then it's done. So I think we're going to see all six of those pieces happening in the religious ceremony. However, the 1953 coronation was nearly 4 hours, and we're hearing that this one is going to be, I've heard recently, between an hour and a half. So it's going to be much reduced, but I suspect we're going to see all six pieces. And the other thing is, I suspect that although we've been hearing a lot about dress code for guests and whether or not the women will wear tiaras and whatnot, I suspect that for Charles and Camilla, we're going to see them wearing all of the traditional garments. So they've got the robe of state, anointing gown, there's a mantle, there's the super tunica. They'll have their robes of estate, which that's one of the big changes. So if anyone doesn't know, the robe of state is a crimson robe. It's what the monarch normally wears to Parliament for the state opening, and that is what the lords will be wearing for all of the coronation ceremony. Charles and Camilla will change at one point into the robe of estate. They each have one, and that's a purple robe. And so historically, the lords and peers have changed. They will not be wearing robes of estate from what we've heard. But I suspect Charles and Camilla will wear all of these traditional garments. So we'll see them come in the red. They'll leave in the purple. Mm-hmm. Charles will wear all of the garments that he normally would. So I think while it's being kind of boiled down to the quote unquote necessities, I think we're going to see those key elements. And we do still have, which I'm happy to see, we have the procession from Buck House to Westminster Abbey and then back after. They are taking one change. They're taking the Queen's Diamond Jubilee carriage from Buck House to Westminster Abbey. And then they're taking the gold state coach back from Westminster Abbey to Buckingham Palace, which I'm happy to see. So the gold state coach is actually a somewhat important part of the coronation. So George III had it made in the 1760s, and his son, George IV, used it in 1821, and it's been used for every coronation since. So we still have that. But I think, unfortunately, any of the quote-unquote extra events are seemingly to go by the wayside. So I don't think we're going to see a big event with the foreign royals who are attending, which is unfortunate because we don't get to see those a lot anymore. And especially the Brits tend not to take part in other events. Last summer, we had Princess Ingrid Alexandra's 18th birthday. It was very exciting. Most of the European royals were there. The Brits weren't. I don't think we're going to have a gala like we had for Queen Elizabeth II's coronation or her father, grandfather, great-grandfather, etc., unfortunately.
Right.
In 1953, the Queen also hosted a Commonwealth banquet, and from what I'm reading, that's also not going to happen. So it's interesting to see what's being cut.
That is interesting. And I have heard and read, and when I was in the UK earlier, I asked some people at the Tower, you know, when I was seeing the jewels, what they had heard. And it wasn't clear, but they had all heard, as you just said, that it would be shorter and boiled down to the essentials. And it's interesting to think about what those essentials are. And you mentioned the six of them, and I wanted to follow up on a couple, because the anointing is something that is part of that religious ceremony. And in medieval times, that was, you know, like the stamp of approval from God, that you are now God's anointed, chosen and anointed person. And it made it more difficult to rebel. Not impossible. People still rebelled, but it was a more serious issue. What do you think the anointing represents now? And we are hearing a little bit about some of that religious aspect of it. So what can you tell us about that?
So I'm really interested in the anointing because we had heard reports had started circulating in, I want to say it was late January, that the king was looking to potentially have a clear canopy made so that his anointing could be filmed. So if people don't know, in 1953, the queen's anointing was not filmed. And a canopy, normally a gold canopy goes over the monarch's head. And it was not filmed. And at the 1937 coronation, they weren't filming, but no pictures were taken of George VI when he was being anointed. So we had heard that Charles was potentially wanting to open this up and let people see this for the first time in history. However, this past week, it's been said that no, there will be a gold canopy and it will not be filmed. So it will still be private. And I find this really interesting for a few reasons. One, as an historian, I am disappointed because in Charles's reign, we have been able to see things that we've never seen before, i.e. the Accession Council. That's never been public before. So that was fascinating. So I'm a little disappointed we won't see it. But the other side of this is that I'm interested to know for Charles what religious significance the anointing takes, because we really don't know much about Charles's religious life. We know that the queen was a devout Christian, but we know less about Charles. And from what we know of Charles, this is my interpretation only, but I've always seen his interest in religion as more academic, and he's always wanted it to be multi-faith and to embrace different faiths. And so it's interesting to me. I had kind of figured, I wondered at what point and on what things the Church of England would push back on. And of course, these are just reports. So we don't know if any of it was actually going to happen. But the anointing is a religiously significant moment, absolutely, for the monarch. The other piece of this is, though, and because it is public, well, not the anointing, but the ceremony is, what weight does it have for the people watching? And so I think the makeup, if we're just focusing on Britain and we're not looking at the Commonwealth or elsewhere in the world, how much less of the population is now active members of the Church of England that this would carry weight for them. So that I'd be interested to know, because in 1953, it still carried a lot of weight for much of the population. But now that the number of churchgoers is falling, and there are also just many more faiths in Britain, and a growing population has many different faiths. So I'm interested to see kind of what weight that carries for the audience and for us watching.
But
I think that's one of the questions that I've been asked a lot. I've been doing some interviews in press, and that's one thing I've been asked is, when so few people are now religious and just we have less people in the Church of England and more people of different faiths, why are they holding on to this Church of England ceremony? And also the other thing, so if people don't know, an interesting Canadian history fact, in 1953, the Canadian Prime Minister, Louis Saint-Laurent, said that the coronation was not a Canadian event and not a Commonwealth event because it's strictly a Church of England ceremony. It's not even, so I always wonder, like, what is Scotland thinking? It's not Church of Scotland. It's not looking to Edinburgh. So it's a very English tradition still. And we do have some elements from the different home nations and even from the Commonwealth we usually see, but it's a very English tradition and it's a Church of England ceremony. So I think that's an interesting aspect that in 2023 raises even more questions.
Right. Now I had heard, and this was before the Queen passed away, so this is just when people were speculating, that rather than being known as the Defender of the Faith, a title that started hilariously, I think, with Henry VIII, but that Charles was going to be either Defender of Faith, not the Faith, or Defender of the Faiths, plural. And then that idea sort of faded away. I wondered if you'd heard that or if we know anything about that, because that title, Defender of the Faith, has been associated with the monarch since the time of Henry VIII, and you can see it on the coins and on the seal and all of that. Have you heard anything about that?
I did hear that before, and I that is one that I've always wondered. I mean, he's obviously, they aren't Catholic, famously not Catholic anymore. So I've always wondered why they held on to a very Catholic title that has been given to other Catholic monarchs also. It's not just Henry. So I have always been, I was like, why did you hang on to that? I have heard that Charles wanted to be known as Defender of Faith or Defender of the Faiths. I've always wondered what the mechanism for changing that would be. They obviously can't go to the Catholic Church and say, hey, we want this other title. That's not going to happen. But then if they don't need to go to the Catholic Church, can he just change it? And so, and I was thinking about this the other day because it did just kind of disappear. So I don't know if it's that he had lofty goals when he was younger and it was an idea, or if it's just something that someone else put around, like started a rumor essentially, and it seemed plausible and gained some weight. I do think that we're going to see in Charles's reign, we're going to see more multicultural and multi-faith events. I suspect that the Commonwealth Day service is going to be even more multicultural. I had heard also that he wanted to bring in other faiths, including Catholicism, Judaism, etc., into the coronation. I don't know that the Church of England is going to go for that. I'm not sure who really gets the final say between the King and the Archbishop of Canterbury and how. Do you flip a coin? Do you arm wrestle? I don't know how they're going to decide that and who kind of has the weight in that. A religious scholar would probably have more insight, but I'm intrigued to see if anything, especially if anything related to Catholicism shows up. just because, and as I'm not practicing, but I am Catholic. And so I always view the Church of England, it's just different for me, the way looking at it. And so I'm interested to see if there's any Catholic elements included. I suspect there won't be, because as I said, it's a strongly COE service, but who knows? Maybe it will.
Well, right. And, you know, back in the original days, so we know that for sure William the Conqueror, maybe Harold Godwinson, but for sure William the Conqueror was crowned in a ceremony at Westminster Abbey, blah, blah, blah. And originally it was a Catholic ceremony. So it's more of a return than anything super radical. But you're right. It has become such a Church of England thing. It's just very interesting. The fact that we're having these conversations at all demonstrates, I think, the way the world is changing. Because when the Queen, back in 1953, I don't think anyone was having these conversations. So it is just really interesting the way it's partly reflective. And I think Charles is trying to do this, be reflective of what's happening now. And speaking of that, we know that the coronation chair, which is sometimes called the chair of destiny, was in fact built to house the stone of destiny, which has been included in the chair and has been used in all these coronations. But during the reign of the late queen, that stone, which was taken from Scotland, was returned to Scotland. Now, I understand the stone is going to come back. I think it's at Edinburgh Castle now, and it's going to come back to London to be in Westminster Abbey and placed back in the chair for the coronation. Have you heard that? Does that sound right? And why would that be important or something to even think about taking the time and the energy and the effort to make happen?
So that is true. It was a very important political issue. So if anyone doesn't know, there's the Stone of Destiny, aka the Stone of Scone. And it was a Scottish stone used in, well, they think it's from Scotland. It might be from Ireland. It might be from farther afield, but it's a big stone essentially. And it was used in the Scottish coronation ceremony until the English took it on one of their invasions and incorporated it in.
Right.
And as you said, they shoved it under the seat of the chair, which seems really weird to me that you'd essentially sit on it, but I guess it made sense at the time. And so they, it stayed under the underneath the seat in the coronation chair until the 1950s. And then it was, I believe, four or five young men from Scotland went and stole it back from the Abbey and wanted to take it back for Scotland. They took it on a bit of a walkabout. It traveled around quite a bit and got a little bit damaged, but it's mostly okay. And then after that, it was eventually found and returned. However, I want to say it was the late 90s. It may have been the early 2000s. It was a very important political discussion. And the English returned it to Scotland, as you say, and it is there right now with the agreement that it would be returned for coronations. So it will be coming, it'll be coming south for a little bit. I'd be shocked if it isn't. It's probably happening soon, I suspect. But it will take a bit of a wander down and then head back up to Scotland once the day is over. I do think it's interesting because it's again indicative of another one of those changes of the relationship between Scotland and England. And as we saw, there was the referendum and there's talk of potentially another referendum happening. I don't know how likely that is. I haven't been following that closely, but the Scottish nationalist movement is at quite a different place now. So it is interesting. It's not just a given anymore. It had to be negotiated that it would come back and then return. I do think that the Queen's passing in Scotland added a different element to that also, because of course she first laid in state in Edinburgh, which is interesting, and she wouldn't have done otherwise. So it does add a different element. But the stone will be returning. I suspect it's probably coming soon. I think we'll probably get some articles on how it's being transported. I would assume driven or on the train, but who knows? Maybe they'll fly it. But I don't know what the protocol on transporting a large stone would be.
Well, it's interesting because this is the first coronation that they've sort of had to ask for it back after returning it, having stolen it a long time ago. So it's just a really interesting element where tradition sort of meets modern life, and it was the right thing to return it, but now they want it back for a moment. It's just very interesting to me. Now, speaking of tradition and modern sensibilities and maybe a little bit more sensitivity, I wonder if we can talk a little bit about some of the regalia. We've talked a little bit, sort of hinted at it. We know that the king will be crowned with St. Edward's crown, as all monarchs are. But Queen Camilla has chosen a different crown than the last queen consort, who's Queen Elizabeth, known now as the Queen Mother, but of course at the time with King George and Queen Elizabeth. She had a crown that was made for her, and that's going to be modified for Camilla. So can you tell us a little bit about that? She's not having a new crown made. Camilla is not having a new crown made, which some consorts have done. So she is using an existing crown, but she's modifying it. So can you tell us about that?
We've seen queen consorts make new crowns for quite some time. So Mary of Modena, who is James II's mm-hmm. wife, is the last. She kept reusing it. And then to quickly run through it, because it explains it. George mm-hmm. I, if you don't know, left his wife locked in a castle because she had an affair. So she didn't come to Britain. So he didn't have a queen to be crowned with. George II's wife, George II also, she didn't. Queen Charlotte, who, if anyone's a Bridgerton fan, you're going to have Queen Charlotte on Netflix right before the coronation. She had married George III 2 weeks prior. So she just wore her matrimonial tiara. I guess may as well get your use out of it. And then George IV did not allow his wife in. And so it's Queen Adelaide in William IV's wife who she decides, hey, Mary of Modena's crown is the last one and I don't want to wear this one. So Adelaide started the tradition of consorts making their own crown. Although in fairness, Victoria's crowned and she is the monarch, so we don't have one. But then Queen Alexandra makes her own. Queen Mary, the ever jewelry magpie that she is, makes her own. And then, as you say, Queen Elizabeth, now yes. The Queen Mother, made her own. So Camilla is using Queen Mary's crown and she's having some of the mm-hmm. arches changed, which changes the way it looks. It changes the silhouette of it. But I think the way it's been presented is quite interesting. I'm not surprised given who Charles is, but this is being touted as a sustainable option, which, I mean, if your other option is creating a crown from scratch, it certainly is. But they're doing more work on it where they're swapping out the stones. So historically, the Koh-i-Noor diamond has gone in the consort's crown for Mary and Elizabeth, but it will not be. Instead, they're going to put the Cullinan, I believe it's the Cullinan 3 and the Cullinan 4. And the Cullinan diamond, also known as the Star of Africa, is the largest diamond found on record. And it was mm-hmm. discovered in South Africa and eventually ended up in Edward VII's possession. And it was cut into several large pieces and then many smaller brilliants. And so two of these are being placed in Mary's crown to kind of quote unquote make it Camilla's. I think this is being done for a few reasons. One, the press release they talked about, this is kind of a nod to the late queen because she often wore the Cullinan pieces. And it also means that the Koh-i-Noor diamond isn't being worn. And if people don't know, they probably do, but if they don't know, the Koh-i-Noor diamond was given under duress or handed over under duress when Britain essentially conquered parts of India in 1849, I believe it was. And at the time, the Maharaja was a 10-year-old. And so he was advised, like, yes, you should give, you'll sign over this, and then you'll also give them the diamond. So the Koh-i-Noor diamond is really coming under controversy now. In as we look at things with a post-colonial framework, the question of should the British royal family even have the Koh-i-Noor diamond still? And I would like to say it's not just up to the royal family. The British government plays a very big role in that. But she is not wearing the Koh-i-Noor. The Koh-i-Noor is staying in the Queen Mother's crown at the Tower of London. So we have an old crown being made new for May.
So that's great. And that's a really complicated and really interesting story of how consorts, you know, some reused, some made their own, this history, this stone that had been used in a couple of them not being used because our sensibilities are different now in 2023 than they were 100 years ago. And it's just really interesting to see that. And certainly those two diamonds that will be used, the Cullinan, I think they're fondly called, quote, granny's chips because the queen would wear them as a pendant. And the two together, I don't know. I don't have any chips that are that size, but they are pretty spectacular pieces. And it is interesting to see these gestures being made. And, you know, we'll see how they play out. But it is really interesting because I think there are some sensitivities specifically being addressed. And so I appreciate you going through that because I think that's one of them. Where a tradition is upheld and yet modified. So we will see Charles and Camilla, and you mentioned this, in the robes they would usually wear and changing into the robes of estate, but the Lord's not so much changing. Well, that right there should save us some time. So, you know, they're bowing to traditions or upholding traditions, which are so important, but also trying to modernize some things. So as we prepare for May 6th, what do you think we should look for? Just to kind of watch out for or questions you might still be bringing, that kind of thing. What are we still on the lookout for?
One thing I'm going to be looking for is looking to the crowned monarchs who are attending, because historically crowned monarchs do not attend other coronations because technically they would outrank the monarch who is to be crowned because they're already crowned. So we have crowned monarchs attending the ceremony, and historically not that many royals have attended other coronations, also because of just travel. We really see this happening in the 19th and 20th century because travel becomes much easier with train and faster ships and whatnot. So that's a pretty modern thing mm-hmm. in and of itself, because when you look at Edward the VII's coronation and George the V's, the royal guest list, if you go through it, suddenly balloons from Victoria's because you've mm-hmm. got all these people traveling. But now we not only have a bunch of heirs. So if you look through the royal guest list of the 1953 coronation, it's just heir after heir after heir because the crown monarchs don't attend. But now we have several confirmed crowned monarchs coming. We have the Belgians coming. The Spanish are coming. Carl Gustav from Sweden is supposed to be coming with Crown Princess Victoria, although he did just have heart surgery. So I'm curious if he will come. Queen Margrethe of Denmark wanted to come, but she just had back surgery, so she won't be able to. But we have a bunch of crowned monarchs coming, so I'm very excited to see that that's very different. I'm also really hoping to see Willem Alexander and Maxima from the Netherlands, mm-hmm. because Maxima, mm-hmm. always fun to see. Her fashion is amazing and she just always makes a statement. But so that's one thing I'll be looking for. That's a different change. And another big change, or I don't know that it's a change, Westminster kind of gets a different, shall we say, look for each coronation, because you can go and read about how the Abbey was temporarily modified for each coronation to allow for more seating, to allow for different things. And so it'll be interesting to see if any changes are made to the seating. I don't think we're going to see stands like we have historically to fit, like we're supposed to have 2,000 to 2,500 people attending, not 7,000 plus like we did mm-hmm. in 1953. But it'll be interesting to see if any temporary changes are made to the Abbey to accommodate people or kind of make changes. And like we said, it'll be interesting to see if we have any other faiths represented in any way at the service. I'm curious to see if perhaps one way I could see it being worked in and not too intrusive on the COE is to perhaps have people of different faiths do different readings, as we've seen at mm-hmm. other services. But I don't know, that might not be possible. And the other thing that I just have to ask at this point, and we won't know, is just what the Prince of Wales' role is going to be. What are we going to see William doing? Because historically, we've had all of the royal dukes pay homage, and we're not going to see that anymore. Right. It's only going to be William. So is he going to do the same thing and it's just going to be him, or are we going to see a change? We don't know that. And I suspect that's not going to be confirmed ahead of time. I suspect it's going to be a wait and see. But every coronation is quite different, although they're kind of following the same script, so to speak. Mm-hmm. They all are different. So it'll be interesting to see how this one deviates.
Well, and one thing we know, so we don't know what William's doing, but we have had confirmed that George, Prince George, and also some of Camilla's grandsons will be pages and will have roles. And so, you know, the queen was so young when she came to the throne. We've probably all seen that hilarious picture of little Prince Charles looking bored out of his mind during the ceremony of his mother. But now the king has adult children and grandchildren who can participate. So that's really interesting as well. That'll be a change from the previous coronation.
It is. And we had heard reports that William and Catherine weren't sure if they wanted George to play much of a role so he wouldn't have attention on him. I think that that's perhaps a tad, maybe naive isn't the right word, but there's always going to be attention on him as a future king. And I think at official events like this, it makes sense. Obviously, he should be left alone in his private life, but at a coronation, mm-hmm. I think it's to be expected that a future monarch has attention paid mm-hmm. to them. I think this is a really cool connection. I also think it's great because, as you said, Camilla's grandsons are also going to be taking part, and there's some other youngsters as well. So he won't be by himself. He'll be with other kids, and his dad will be there. His dad will be taking part. And I am interested to see how Prince Louis handles it. I assume he's going. I'm guessing he's going. It'll be interesting to see if he also has the same bored expression as his grandfather. I suspect he might.
Yes. Well, you know, that was a very long one that little Prince Charles at the time sat through. So maybe if things move a little more quickly, Louis won't have a chance to get quite so bored. But it is really interesting to see these generations and to see, you know, it's Charles, of course, was the longest Prince of Wales in British history. And so now he's come all that way from being that young boy watching his mother to being crowned himself. So it's been quite a journey, an amazing time for the Queen and for the world. And so it's going to be really interesting to see the changes that show up. So thank you for talking us through all of this and pointing out some things that we can be watching for. And I'm really excited to do that as the weeks count down as we get closer and closer. Now, tell us what else we know about Royal Central, but what else are you working on? I know you've got some exciting stuff going on, and where can we follow you? And I will put all of this, all these links in the show notes.
Oh, absolutely. So yes, you can find me on Royal Central, and it's not just me. There's many of us who write. So if you want royal news from around the world, I would recommend following Royal Central. We cover pretty much all the royal families. So no matter who you are interested in, there will be something for you. I also have my own blog, as one might imagine. It is An Historian About Town, and I cover history and culture there. I have book reviews. I cover period dramas. And I also now, this is new for me. I'm really excited. It's just new this April. I have a Substack newsletter. So on the first and third Sundays of each month, I have an exclusive Substack newsletter where I do a period drama review. I do book previews. I have a newsletter exclusive history items where it's kind of like a blog post, but it's only in the newsletter. And I also share my thoughts on royal news items. If you do read my blog, you'll know I mostly focus on history, but I also do a little bit of commentary on royal news. So you can find my Substack. It's also under An Historian About Town. But I just launched that. I'm really excited. I'm really enjoying it. It's been a fun change of pace and something new. And I also am on TikTok. It's an interesting venture because I'm very new to TikTok, and it's a steep learning curve. But you can also find me there under An Historian About Town. And so what I've kind of got going on TikTok right now is when coronation news comes out, I comment on the news and then I kind of explain the history behind it. And then I also, unrelated to the coronation, I have a series on The Great, the history behind The Great, because we have a new series, Season of The Great, coming out in May. So I'm going through some Romanov history, Catherine the Great's era, for anyone who doesn't know. So I'm enjoying it. I'm trying to push myself in 2023. So it's been a lot to balance, but I feel like I'm learning some new things.
Well, that's great. And I'm so glad, because I know even from the last time you were on this show, you've started all these new things. So I really wanted to make sure that we all had a chance to hear about them. So amazing. It's amazing how many things you're doing. So I think you're definitely pushing yourself, and I'm so impressed and excited. So I will have links for all of those things in the show notes so that you can follow Jessica as well and keep up to date on all the royal news from the British, which we're really excited about with the coronation, but also all over the world and other things as well. So thank you so much for spending this time with us and sharing your expertise. We're so excited to have heard from you. And now we know even more about the upcoming coronation and what to watch for. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me and for letting me chat about the coronation, because I will talk about coronation history with anyone who will let me.
Well, we're really glad you did so with us. So thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening, and continue to be with us, and we'll keep shaking up history together. Thank you for joining us for Royals, Rebels, and Romantics. I do have a favor. If you enjoyed this episode, could you please go leave a rating, maybe refer to a friend, and think about joining our patron family. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll keep shaking up history together.